So let's have some questions and discussion, and please let me know what you're interested in, what you want to hear about. Yeah.
How would you think that since always the news is always so very bad, you're always watching, it's very hard to get away from it, and people tend to be very, very negative around you, and what type of practice your mind would get to kind of counteract this?
Okay, so what kind of practice do we use to deal with what we hear on the news and deal with the negativity that we feel that other people suffer from because of the news? Okay, there's many different antidotes. Number one is don't listen to the news. Okay? Yeah. Now you're going to say, oh, but I have to listen to the news. You know, the news is basically gossip. Okay, isn't it? You know, it's basically gossip. There's some truth in it, but it's very biased, it's very partial. If you listen to the news that's reporting the same event that happens in another country, you hear an entirely different news report. Okay, so don't regard the news as absolute truth. And you don't have to know everything that's going on everywhere. We don't need to know all the details of every single thing. Okay? If we know generally, I think that's sufficient. Okay? So one is we don't need to listen to the news so much. Second is we don't need to watch television so much and watch movies. Yeah? And go to the cinema, because basically what television is again, it's just stories people have made up that give us a very diluted view of what humanity is and what relationships are. Most of the movies are about crime, aren't they? Okay? And they exalt crime in some way or another. They never show crime in the inner cities where people are really suffering. They show all these kind of crimes of very rich people who have, you know, funny ways of doing their crimes. It's true, isn't it? You know, they don't. So, and what I find absolutely amazing is that we think that watching movies that show people suffering from crime is entertaining. You know, what's entertaining about that? Look at it this way. If 9/11 had been a movie instead of reality, it would have been a box office sellout. People would have loved it. What a thrilling, dramatic event. How entertaining. But it wasn't something that Hollywood invented. It was reality. And it was traumatic for people. Now, why do we call it entertaining when it's not true, when it's the same events that could be real? I think something's wrong that we think violence and killing is entertaining. And I think something's very wrong when we, you know, I mean, how much sex they show on TV too, and in movies. When people think watching somebody else have sex is entertaining. Huh? You know? So I think one thing we need to do is just turn off the television, not go to movies. You don't need to read everything in the newspaper. You don't need to read all the catalogs that come to your home that encourage you to buy more things that you don't need. And if you do just this one thing, you're going to have so much more time in your life. You're going to have time to talk to your kids. You're going to have time to enjoy your spouse. You're going to have time to do meditation practice and time to go on retreat. And you won't be getting all this negative stuff inside. And when you're sitting in the car driving from one place to another, you don't need to turn on the rock music with all of its vibration and the news and the advertising. You can sit in the car and chant mantra. Okay? So I think one step is just very practical. We have the choice about how much media we want to consume, we want to be in touch with. And we have the power and choice, and we don't need to feel like the media, we don't need to let the media invade our lives. We can maintain our own regulations and our own power in respect to the media. And I think this is very, very important. And that's just on a practical level how to deal with it. But I tell you, it makes a real big difference. Okay? Then, second thing, you know, you do know something about what's going on. I mean, you don't need to read the news every day to know that people are getting killed in Iraq. Do you? Because every single day, U.S. troops are getting killed. Every single day, Iraqi civilians are getting killed. We don't need to read the news to know that. It's happening every day. We know that, that there's suffering there. We can have compassion for the people. Okay? Not icky-gooey compassion, like, oh, too bad that's you, I'm glad it's not me. Okay? But really have compassion. Wow. You know, this whole situation in Iraq is, this comes about when people are not observant of karma. You know, this whole mess in Iraq is a karmic manifestation, and this is our Dharma teaching about what happens when we don't pay attention and we commit negative actions and we don't spend time creating positive actions. Okay? And so we can have compassion for people who are reaping all those results, and compassion for the people who are creating negative karma in the situation by creating more causes for suffering. Okay? So you can think of what's happening in Iraq with compassion. We're not ignoring their suffering. We're not sticking our head in the sand and pretending that other people aren't suffering. No, we know they're suffering. And we take our responsibility and we vote and we speak out. Okay? But we can have an attitude of compassion, knowing that the suffering those beings are going through exists because the causes for that suffering that exists. And the suffering isn't a given, that when those beings and those people can learn about the Dharma and stop creating negative karma and stop letting their hatred and bias and prejudice rule their minds, then their suffering can be stopped, you know, in the long term. So we can still have an optimistic view about humanity and the state of the world, but we know it's going to take some time for people's minds to be free of ignorance, anger, and attachment, but we know it's possible because the method exists to do that. So we can be optimistic. Okay?
We know that the Muslim world, okay, they don't like this. And then some of the people just, you know, all the religious supposed to try to create a peace in the world. Mm-hmm. But actually the people stick with their beliefs, well, their own gods. They tend to exclude others, mm-hmm. and try to have a conflict, generate conflict between the different beliefs. Mm-hmm. Do you have any way to suggest how we can solve this problem? Mm.
Okay. So about the conflict between religion. This, I think, is actually the way that you spoke it. You know, Muslims don't like us and the religions are fighting. I think that we have this vision because of the media, because of media distortion. Yeah. I don't think it's true that Muslims don't like us. There are many Muslims in this country that are us. Okay, us refers to everybody who's American. There's Americans of every religion. And I don't think even that all the Muslims living in other countries don't like us. You know, they're just trying to practice their faith. We have a few radicals, okay, and fundamentalists that are rabble-rousers. But also within our own country, we have people like that. You know, and isn't our own government in some way rabble-rousing us to have a war mentality that wants to fight abroad? Okay? So I don't think, you know, we can just put people in categories like this. We need to all look in our own hearts. And I think this is one of the values. why it's important to have interreligious dialogue, because then we learn about each other's religions, and we do see that it's not a conflict of religions, but rather it's a conflict of a few fundamentalist radicals who have the ability to stir everybody else up. Okay? So, you know, that's why I'm active in interreligious dialogue, because I think it cuts down these barriers. Last week, I was in Boston, and I went to a Catholic nunnery. I had met some Catholic nuns some years ago. They had come to the Dalai Lama's teachings in India. So whenever I see people from other religions at the Dalai Lama's teachings, I try and go up and talk to them and welcome them and everything. Anyway, these nuns and I became friends, and so I went to visit them once a few years ago when I was in Boston, and then I went again this year. And they asked me to give a talk to the other nuns in the convent. It was a wonderful experience, because these women really knew what I was talking about, you know, when we talk about working with our minds. And they also had told me that just the day before, they had invited a Muslim speaker to come in and speak to them. And in fact, this one particular man had come for 3 or 4 times talking about Islam, because they decided that they needed to learn more about Islam as a religion. Okay? So then they were saying, and these are nuns that are cloistered, who don't go out very much. And look, here they had a Buddhist speaker and a Muslim speaker within a couple of days. So I think this kind of thing is quite important, you know, to ask speakers from the, you know, the moderate Muslim communities, of which there are many, many, many in this country, to come and speak. Yeah? And then, you know, have maybe some kind of social thing. Have a potluck with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And just talk and learn about each other. Because I think there's actually a lot to share. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And you say, well, what do we have to share? Well, you know, if you look at it, I think many of you are immigrants to America, and many people in the Islamic community are immigrants to America. I mean, what an incredible experience to share. How are you an immigrant with kids growing up in this country with American values? Mm-hmm. That's something I think, you know, you would share so much with many of the Muslim immigrants. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So it's not like, you know, there's nothing to talk about. Yeah, we're all human beings, and there's a lot to talk about, a lot that we can share together. And I think we also have to be very careful in our own country of just putting people in boxes and thinking that we don't, that we understand them, you know. And see, this is what I'm saying, is the media creates this concept. All Iraqis are like this. All Muslims are like this. All Saudi Arabians are like this. All Israelis are like this. All Palestinians are like this. And it's not true. Yeah? And it's the same way as in other countries. Many people think all Americans are like this. Yeah. Well, are Americans, you know, are we one united people in our beliefs? Hardly. You know, there's so many divergent beliefs in this country. And politically, I mean, there's so much divergence. It's not like all Americans have the same belief. Yeah. But, you know, it's very easy for people in other countries to say, oh, well, you know, all the Americans think like George Bush. Is that true? Okay? I mean, if you go abroad and people start projecting on you that you think just like George Bush, what are you going to do? No, sir! No, don't blame American foreign policy on me. I don't agree with what's going on. Okay? So in the same way, we have to see people of other countries and other religions as similar, you know. They don't always support what is the view that gets the most media attention. Okay? Because what does the media pay attention to? People who are on the extremes. Media is not going to pay attention to people who are doing interreligious dialogue and, you know, creating harmony and stuff like that. And so that's why I say that you know, we should not think that what we get from the newspapers and radio and so on is an accurate description of what's going on. It's very, very lopsided. And I think it's important, as many of you are parents, make sure that your kids grow up with this big view. You know, don't let them just think that people exist in little boxes and that all groups of people think alike. And expose your children to people from many races and religions and ethnic groups and political beliefs and religious beliefs, so that your kids can have a feeling, oh yeah, there's a lot of diversity. You know, I don't need to be like everybody else, but I can respect and value other people even though they're different from me. You know, and I think that as a parent, if you can, you know, inculcate that kind of vision in your kids, you're going to be creating the cause for a lot of happiness for your children and a lot of happiness for this world. Yes.
Yeah, sometimes my Buddhist friends will tell me about their marital problems, and sometimes they even want some advice. What would be appropriate advice for a Buddhist friend that wants?
Okay, so sometimes your Buddhist friends tell you their marital problems and want advice. And what's appropriate advice to give them? You have to listen to each situation separately. Sometimes people just want somebody to talk to and they don't want advice. Sometimes they just want to know that somebody can hear them. So you have to like suss out the situation and see, you know, because, and sometimes the best thing you can do to help somebody is just listen. And sometimes as you're listening, just repeat back to them what you're hearing them say. Oh, it sounds like you're disturbed because of da-da-da-da-da. Or it sounds like you're angry because of da-da-da-da-da. Or it sounds like you're jealous because of da-da-da-da. You know, just reflect back to them what you hear them saying. And sometimes when they feel that somebody's understood them, that's really all they want. Yeah? Sometimes people want suggestions about what to do. In those times, then you have to just think about, you know, what could possibly be a good thing to suggest to the person to do. But what I usually do when people ask me, what do? I usually say, first, don't do anything. First, look at your own emotions and try and work out your own emotions and have a, you know, calm down from whatever is upsetting you. And develop a loving attitude. And if you develop a loving attitude, then you'll know more automatically what to do. Because I think very often people jump too quickly to what do I do, when what they really mean doing, like what do I do to the other person, when really what they need to do is work with their own mind and calm down. You know, because if they're able to eliminate their own, you know, anger or upset or depression or confusion or attachment or jealousy, if they're able to work with their own mind and eliminate those, then how they see the situation is completely different. And thus how they act in the situation is very different.
Okay. Yeah, one friend told me it's very hard to try to stop people that's closest. Yeah, when you have a bad marital problem, it doesn't work in you. Mm-hmm. For example, it's easy to practice loving kindness to stranger, to yourself.
Yeah. Okay. So one of your friends said that it's easier to practice loving kindness with strangers, not with the people who you're close to, because sometimes those are the people you get the most upset at. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. You know what I think is very important in marriages? Is to never forget basic human manners. Yeah? Because what happens often is we think somebody is so much a part of us because we see them every day that we no longer have to treat them with basic human manners the way we treat anybody in society. We think, oh, they're just a part of me, so I can boss them around, I can yell at them, I can shout at them, I can, you know, even slap them, and they're still going to love me. No! You know? So I think it's really important right from the very beginning of a marriage to always keep basic human manners in your marriage. You know, just even saying please and thank you, and I appreciated that you did that, and thank you for helping me, or I really admire that quality in you. You know, just giving your spouse some good feedback, you know, and being polite and saying please and thank you and I appreciate, the way you would do with anybody in society. Just that, I think, can save so many marriages. Yeah? Because when we start to step beyond those bounds of basic human manners, that's when we just let our mouth go. And then we say so many horrible things to the people we care about the most. You know, and of course, once we've said them, we can't put them back in our mouth. So even though we may not really mean them, in the fit of an emotion, we say horrible things. And then, of course, the other person remembers them, and it destroys their trust. So that's why it's very important, you know, from the beginning, really, you know, don't speak to a family member speak to a family member with the same courtesy that you would speak to a stranger with. Okay? And don't forget that. And really try and, you know, every day show some appreciation for your family members. You know, your kids or your parents or your spouse. And I think this can prevent a lot of problems. But before I came here, I was in Phoenix. Now I flew in 2 days ago from Phoenix. So when I was in Phoenix, I called my cousin, who I haven't seen in about 10 years. He didn't even know I was coming. And I called him. He's not Buddhist. And he and his wife came to the Dharma Center where I was speaking one night. And then they stayed afterwards, and we talked, you know, after the Dharma talk. And he and his wife have been married, I don't know, 25, maybe 30 years, something, quite a long time. And I was so impressed with the way his wife spoke about my cousin. You know, just, she was just talking about his good qualities, I mean, to me. After all these years of being married, and, you know, here I am, kind of a stranger to her in some way, and she's just, you know, saying, oh, he does this so well, and he does that, and, you know, I really appreciate this and that. And I thought, you know, how wonderful. I mean, what an incredible thing that she talks so beautifully about him. Yeah? And, you know, I mean, she was saying this to me, and I don't know, he may have heard some of it, or he may not have. But, you know, in any case, he knows that this is how she speaks of him. Okay? What a wonderful way to establish trust and closeness. Yeah. Now, when you're around your, when you're with your spouse, with other people, do you say kind things about your spouse to them? Or even if you're not with your spouse, do you say kind things about them with other people? Or do we take the opportunity to complain? Yeah? Now, I mean, how do you feel if your spouse complains about you when you're at a social gathering? Or complains about you, you know, behind your back? I mean, it destroys the trust, doesn't it? So, and don't wait for your spouse to say good things about you. You know, you take the initiative and start talking that way about them. And the same thing with your parents. You know, and the same thing with your kids and your brothers and sisters. Yeah? And if you do, guaranteed it's going to transform your marriage. You know, guaranteed. Okay? So, you know, encourage your friends to do that. Sometimes when somebody's angry, what I tell them to do is remember what the qualities were that initially drew them to that person. Because sometimes when you're married for a while, you take the other person's good qualities for granted. And, you know, you just expect them to have those qualities plus some other ones that they don't have yet. You know, but I think it's important to remember what drew you initially to that person and the qualities in them that you admired, so that you have that same sense of respect and appreciation for your spouse. Okay? And then to point out to them what you like and admire about them, and to say that, you know, to other people when you speak about them. Okay? Because if we just look at what we don't like, then we're only going to talk about what we don't like. And then how do you feel when people talk about what they don't like about you? Well, that's how your spouse feels when you talk about what you don't like about them. You know? It doesn't promote harmony. Yeah, people just get stuck in looking at the negative. And they don't have to. We can also look at what we really appreciate. Okay? So let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes. And just think about what we heard today. You know, put it into practice. Apply it to your life. Just a short meditation to review what you heard and think about it and begin to practice it.